This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Before we begin our program today, we want to offer our condolences to the families of the victims from last night's shooting. And with us now, with an update on what happened at the FedEx facility in Indianapolis, is WFYI's Jill Sheridan, who's been covering this. Jill, what can you say about the situation? What can you tell us what you've seen so far?
Well, we did just hear from city officials and law enforcement. And, you know, Mayor Joe Hogsett said, you know, the eyes of the nation, as you heard at the top of the hour, are on Indianapolis today in ways that, you know, we would never hope for. So we know, we hear from police this morning that, you know, the shooting occurred shortly before midnight. Four people were actually shot in the parking lot outside of this FedEx facility, which is a ground facility, not part of the larger FedEx facility that employs thousands, I think, here in Indianapolis. And then the gunman went into the building and shot another four people and killed himself. Of course, we're not going to have likely names. The investigation is still active, ongoing at that site on the west side of Indianapolis near the airport today. So this is a heavy lift for police and for the whole community.
And are you getting a sense on if there are going to be any other updates later today?
It sounded like police thought that it would take hours to finish processing the scene. So I don't know if we expect something possibly later tonight, this evening, or late afternoon. Again, they couldn't tell us for sure, but within 24 hours is what you mentioned.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jill. We'll definitely be keeping in touch and getting any updates from you as the day goes by. We appreciate you stopping by.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
And that's WFYI's Jill Sheridan. With topics like this, anxiety about going back to work and going back out amongst people can come up. And anxiety has been a huge factor for many people this past year. COVID-19 created a climate of uncertainty and unpredictability. But now that vaccinations are underway and some government officials are pushing back to return to normal, companies may be getting their employees ready to go back to work. With new variants of COVID circling through communities, the thought of going back to work brings a new set of fears, even for those who are fully vaccinated. Will we ever be safe? With us now is clinical psychologist Maria Hanslick. She's also the owner of the Integrated Psychological Center of Indiana. Welcome, Dr. Hanslick.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start off, you know, sort of tying into the events that just unfolded last night, but also to the broader topic of COVID. And there's this general anxiety that people seem to be experiencing about going back to work. Are these normal feelings to have in situations where there's a feeling of unpredictability?
Absolutely. That is that feeling of stress or discomfort absolutely is a part of our brain systems. You know, we are wired to scan the environment for danger in order to protect ourselves, really. So when there has been, you know, when we were getting used to having to work from home, having to shelter in place, there was a natural adjustment period. And just like there was a natural adjustment period there, there's going to be, it makes sense that there would be considerable reservations kind of returning to work or perhaps letting down one's guard a bit more.
And you know, are you seeing this at all with folks that even if they're fully vaccinated, they're just petrified to even think about going back to normal? It's been like a year of living in a different situation, and now you've got to kind of unlearn all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we actually have research to support that. The American Psychological Association every year conducts a Stress in America survey, and they just completed their 2021 survey. They collected the data in late January, early February, with 3,000 adults across the country. And what they found is nearly half of all of the respondents said that they felt uneasy adjusting to in-person interaction. And this was both for adults who had received the COVID-19 vaccine already. That was at 48% versus 49% who hadn't. So that absolutely is something that's occurring regardless of vaccination status.
And what about, you know, is there a difference between fear and anxiety? And how can people sort of identify those differences?
Sure. I mean, there's overlap, certainly. So when we talk about anxiety, a lot of times that is a worry about the future or And that also comes with a physiological stress response. So whether or not it's something that, you know, would be clinically diagnosed by a psychologist, another mental health professional, or it's just something that someone is aware of, that they are worrying a bit more, that they're noticing muscle tension, rapid heart rate, things like that, that they're more concerned, and it's preventing them from being able to feel as free and as calm as they can. There are certainly ways to be able to kind of reduce that anxiety, reduce that any concern, worry, nervousness, or fear that might pop up and present.
And Maria, sorry for the technical difficulties there. You know, this is the life of COVID. We're all like troubleshooting and becoming IT professionals at the same time. So what can workplaces do to handle employees, for example, who don't want to go back because they have a fear, but the workplaces are like, no, we're going to go back? Is there some kind of a discussion that can be had?
I think there's always room for discussion and for flexibility. I think that's one thing perhaps that we may have been able to get out of this pandemic is the ability to be flexible, and that perhaps there doesn't have to be one right way to do something. So I think to the extent that there can be conversations with management, with supervisors, with HR departments about what that will look like returning to work. I can also see there being room and space for hybrid options before there. I think there are a lot of employers who really weren't able to see or fathom how work could be done without being on site, but perhaps there could be some flexibility there. I think also being able to really understand what the structure is going to be like in the work setting. When people are prepared and they can understand and anticipate what to expect, then that fear response or that anxiety response can reduce much more when they know what they're walking into.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a question from a listener on Twitter. Keith on Twitter says, I feel in my office that if you speak up about wanting to be safer in the office from now on, you're looked at as weak. I'm fearful of retaliation and being stepped over for advancement for wanting to be safe during COVID and after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a hard place to be in. And at the same time, I think it's absolutely important. And there's space to be able to say this is something that's happening. And it's not a paranoid response, or it's not anything like that. But to be able to say, this is a feeling that I'm having, this is a concern I'm having, can we meet halfway? Or what are our options here? Because it's important mm-hmm. for there to be physical safety as well as emotional, psychological safety in the workplace where you are, in order to be able to be effective, to concentrate, and to be able to be productive.
Absolutely. And are there any techniques people can use to check in with themselves, whether they're anxious about, is it anxious, mm-hmm. am I anxious to go to work just because it's a stressful environment, or is this because I'm really freaked out about this virus?
Yeah, absolutely. So my bias is, as a psychologist, certainly, therapy is always a great option for everyone, for a lot of people. You know, if there's anything positive that's come out of the pandemic, hopefully part of it is reducing the stigma associated with being able to receive mental health treatment by a psychologist or another mental health professional. But if therapy is not the route you'd like to go, there are other things that we can do every day to be able to manage the anxiety or fear or worry response. So we know having structure and routine is a positive thing. When we know what to expect, we can do something different. Also, it may seem like kind of trite or like a cliche, but really being able to engage in deeper breathing, to be able to, we know that that shifts people into a calmer state, from fight or flight, kind of looking at danger in the environment, to being able to be a lot calmer. Also being able to, again, seeming silly sometimes, but to name emotion or to notice the feeling that you're having in the moment. We know from neuroscience that the more that we can name the emotion in the moment, it tames the emotion also. So it's not as much of a strong response or an intense response. Other things too is being able to balance the worried thought with a positive thought too. It's not to minimize any of the concern or worry, but it helps to provide a larger lens and a more balanced lens to be able to see what's happening. Positive self-talk is also something great. So being able to say, this is something that I can do. I will take this one step at a time. Those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And what about as we get ready to wrap up here, you know, there's been talk, you know, everyone has a different level of risk that they're willing to take. And with this virus, we're seeing people doing all kinds of things from refusing to wear masks to continuing to shelter in place. Are these all valid responses to being in a pandemic?
Yes, because really, as you mentioned, there's a range of risk response too. And so it's understandable that one person's behavior and one person's risk tolerance is going to vary from the others. I think where conflict arises is when you're in company with other people, either socially or at work, that have differing viewpoints as well as differing risk levels and risk tolerance levels. But being able to understand that mine is going to look different from yours potentially is a way to kind of reduce the intensity and the friction associated with those differences.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Maria Hanslick. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. She's a clinical psychologist and owner of the Integrated Psychological Center of Indiana. Up next, we've heard the stories of frontline workers and may often think of those working in hospitals with COVID-19 patients. But what about those in the dental profession? They've been working on one of the most dangerous places in our body right now, the mouth. We'll hear how they've been coping and new procedures in place to keep them protected. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. A place where the COVID-19 virus tends to hang out is in the mouth and nose, which is why we wear masks to help curb the spread. But what about those who work in professions where they need to get up close to your face and in your mouth? With us today to learn more about how dental health professionals have been handling the pandemic are Dr. Kelton Stewart, chair of the Department of Orthodontics and Facial Genetics at Indiana University, and Dr. Carol Ann Murdoch-Kinch, dean of the IU School of Dentistry. Welcome, both of you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to start with Dr. Stewart. When things went into lockdown mode and people were staying home, many practices temporarily closed their doors. But what if there was a dental emergency? How was that handled?
Well, here at the School of Dentistry, we actually have an emergency clinic. So we had individuals who were trained with the proper protocols to stay safe that we were able to manage those individuals. So we saw hundreds of individuals during the time of the lockdown in the emergency clinic, endodontics, orthodontics. I was the person that came in for that. And so we had all the protocols in place, but we were able to maintain quality of care for those individuals.
Was it I don't know if the word scary is the right word, but sort of unnerving when we didn't really know much about the virus at that point to be still taking in patients?
I think scary is a good word. And yes, I think both the providers and the patients coming in for care were all a little apprehensive. Just with the previous segment with Maria, I think the expectation wasn't there. We didn't have the research at the time. We didn't know how transmission was really happening, but we knew we needed to maintain the care of our patients. And so it became, we take an oath to take care of individuals in the oral cavity. And so we fulfilled that, but it was tense at times.
Mm-hmm. And when you started learning more about the virus, did it become more frightening to know, like, because I remember in the beginning it was like, well, it's only if you're like someone's coughing in your face, and then it became, no, it's just out in the air. So what was that like for you when you started getting more information?
I think dentistry had been ahead of the curve, so to speak. You know, we had protocols in place to keep us safe and protected. So we intensified that quite a bit, but I think most people feel pretty comfortable. We go through extensive training to be prepared to manage emergency situations and to work in a patient's mouth under really extreme circumstances sometimes. And so that part mm-hmm. wasn't scary. It was just business as usual, just with more PPE.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And Dr. Murdock-Kinch, how did the IU School of Dentistry handle things when everything shut down? Was it like, that's the end of dentistry?
No, although I'll admit there were some thoughts like that did pass through my head, what's coming. But we were prepared, as Dr. Stewart has said, back in the late 80s, early 90s with the AIDS epidemic, dentistry was in the forefront and developed new infection control protocols to help protect our personnel as well as our patients. And basically, we just stepped it up based on the science, knowing that this was an airborne pathogen. We knew that we needed to increase protection. And so, as Dr. Stewart said, we immediately switched to different types of masks and other kinds of protective equipment. But the school stayed open during the shutdown to take care of patients with dental emergencies. And many of those patients were patients who didn't have a dentist. So that was something we were proud to be able to step in and help. And over time, we worked with Organized Dentistry, and I know Dr. Wolf is here. The Indiana Dental Association established a task force to help provide the best information for the profession and for the public to understand how best to approach dental care during the pandemic and how to you know, based on the best science that we have available and as it emerged. So we, you know, again, took care of patients with emergencies for the first 2.5-3 months. And then during that time, did a lot of planning to put into place protocols for ramping up and restarting our regular operations, bringing our students back for learning, and restarting our research activities.
Did you feel at all that the dental field was overlooked when people were talking about first responders?
A little bit. You know, we were... part of that original shutdown, and oral health care was not really seen as essential. And yet, if you've ever had a dental infection or a toothache, it's essential. It's essential health care. But soon, I think because of information that was provided by Organized Dentistry, and I think here at the university, we have a lot of allies through the health professions who understand the importance of oral health. And so here on campus, we were seen as essential, and we were provided access to resources that we needed. But early on, we were there to help our colleagues on the front lines. We shared our masks and other personal protective equipment when we had reduced our operations and tried to be good citizens and partners, and then we're ready to come back to continue to take care of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Stewart, were there any innovations that took place during this period in thinking about how patients could be treated while maintaining a safe environment, not only for the dentist, but for other patients that were coming in now?
Yes, we actually started to utilize teledentistry a little bit more. And so speaking specifically for orthodontics, it allowed us to maintain contact with the patient, let them know they're not alone, provide them with guidance and recommendations. And then internally, we enhanced some of our air filtration systems. We supplemented those types of items in our classrooms and lectures. We've added additional suction units to make sure we can remove ambient air away from a patient when they're most at risk. Typically, when the procedure is actually happening, there's nothing above you. You can't wear your mask. And so it was just important that we take every step to make sure that the patients are safe as well as the personnel is providing the care.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned that, I'm remembering my first trip back to the dentist after things opened up, and I felt like I was with astronauts. They were like wearing their gowns. They had these face shields, and then there's the air suction. And then I had to do like a special mouthwash before they even would see me. Are those protocols that are going to continue to be in place even after people get vaccinated?
We've been very diligent to make sure that we stay aligned with CDC guidelines and just best practices. And so I think there will be elements that we'll maintain after the pandemic. We're hopeful as dentists, you say astronaut, it's a lot to put all the things on, and it's not always comfortable. It's necessary, but not always comfortable. And so I think there'll be parts that do persist.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Murdock-Kinch, you mentioned, you know, there were things that were put into place from before with HIV and AIDS. Did you use any of those currently in the current situation, or have you implemented even more, I guess, new practices?
That's a great question. In fact, what we learned from the AIDS epidemic when back in the late 80s and early 90s established standard protocols, standard infection control protocols that we use every day in dentistry. And that was already in place before COVID hit. And when COVID hit, the only changes were really to enhance what we were doing by changing the type of masks we used, providing face shields and hair coverings and full gowns, and then really looking at how we manage the aerosols in the dental operatory, really going the extra mile to reduce the amount of air water spray that was spread through the operatory, and screening our patients before they come in to the clinic based on symptoms, and again, making sure that all of our personnel in the clinics were protected and that we use physical distancing and increased cleaning of surfaces, door handles, and that sort of thing. So those were the major changes, but most of it we already had in place based on what we learned from AIDS and which were established as standard protocols since AIDS came on the scene.
Mm-hmm. And what about with students and folks that are studying dentistry? Did they have to change how they're seeing, you know, the patients and doing their, I guess, practice runs?
Yes. So most of the changes occurred before they get to clinic. We moved all of our instruction online. And then when they work on mannequins before they, you know, they learn all the procedures they do as a dentist on a mannequin first. Those were done partially at a distance and partially in the building with distancing and so on. But then as we brought them back in to work in the clinics, we had to train them on the new infection control protocols, how to put on and take off all of the personal protective equipment. We also required them to work in pairs, again, to help make it safer and reduce aerosol production in the operatory, protect our patients. So it was a really intense ramping them up to get them back into the clinics. But they adapted really well, and I'm really proud of how they've have met the challenge. How about you, Dr. Stewart? How do you think our students have done?
Well, I think it's been it's frustrating, but a tremendous learning experience. I think to go through and to be able to watch an institution come together and put in protocols, I think will give them a leg up. You know, hopefully we won't have another global pandemic, but the reality is there's always some microorganism around the corner that we have to deal with. And as a section, as you've already indicated, you know, we're always at risk. We're always in the mouth, and it's a way that you can transmit or receive different things. And so I think it's been a fruitful learning experience for them.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned that, Dr. Stewart, I wonder, you know, was the dental field like other public health organizations or places that were saying this, there was never a moment of what if a pandemic happens? It was a when. Do you feel like that's similar in the dental field? They were just like, it's going to happen at some point.
I don't know that we wished or thought it would happen, but we, again, I think we've done a great job of being vigilant and trying to anticipate, you know, what are things on the horizon, whether it's AIDS or whether it's COVID or those types of things, and putting things in place where we can continue to provide care. As Dean Murdoch-Kinch mm-hmm. indicated, if you have a toothache, you want to see a dentist and you want to see them yesterday. And so making sure mm-hmm. that we can get people in and stay safe ourselves and keep our staff safe, but then make sure that it's a safe environment for the patient as well is something that we're always thinking about and always trying to incorporate new technologies and techniques to allow us to do so.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Stewart, I'm also wondering, you know, have you faced any difficulties in your practice in terms of with the social distancing? Like, do you have to do more procedures yourself and not have another assistant in the room, or how is that working?
No, we actually did the opposite. We actually mandated that we always have an assistant to ensure that we can do that. Other changes we have made is, you know, increasing the duration of an appointment, giving us time to get a patient in safely, do the procedure, and then to sterilize the area or clean the area, disinfect, I should say, on the back end. So just making sure that we can do all the things possible to ensure that not just COVID, but any pathogen, any harmful agent could be removed from that place before the next patient comes in.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Murdoch-Kinch, you mentioned doing some online courses, working on mannequins. Is that going to change the way things are done in dentistry education moving forward? Is there this option to just study from home?
I think we will embrace the learning technologies where it's appropriate, but there's no substitute for being in class together with the faculty, with your teachers, with your classmates, and with the patient. So I think that, you know, when it comes to courses that you know, basically learning facts or knowledge, online methods may be better, but certainly when we do a lot with people, we learn a lot from each other and about what it means to be a health professional. You can't do that from home. You really do need to be immersed in an environment with others. And patient care is such a huge part of our education. Our students who spend 4 years to earn their DDS degree spend at least 3 years working with patients on a daily basis. And so you really can't substitute that, can't really do that at home. So we'll take away some of it, but I think we will be going back to in-person learning for most of this.
Are you noticing any hesitancy for folks to enroll in dental school? Like, have you seen any changes in the numbers, or is it still pretty much the same?
Our applications are at least as high as they were last year, and I think there's some indication they're increasing. Dentistry is still seen as an attractive option, and I think the other thing is that even though we're in a pandemic and even though we're working in the mouth, there have been no known cases, or if there has been, it's one, maybe, of any transmission of COVID within the dental setting. And dentistry is a great profession. I think there's a renewed interest in health professions and public health through this pandemic, and may actually bring a new young people into the profession who might not have considered dentistry in the past. So no indication that interest is decreased. If anything, it may be increasing.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Stewart, I know earlier we were talking in the first segment about anxiety and returning to the workplace. Do you find any patients that are just very anxious to even come in person because they're not sure what's going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, patients and still staff and you know, patient education and staff education is a huge role. So I spend quite a bit of time talking with individuals. And then we do have the capacity to make, you know, modifications and adjustments. So can we have a patient come in at a non-peak time at the beginning of the morning where they're the first person that we see, or maybe even the end of the day? And so we're trying to be as flexible as possible to meet them where they are. Again, knowing that there's a wide spectrum, people who are over the pandemic and people who are, as you said earlier, you know, are still sheltering in place and trying to do everything they can to keep themselves safe.
Mm-hmm. Did you see any increase in certain, I don't know, conditions, cavities? People are eating a lot of candy, they're stressed out, and now they're in for a surprise.
A little bit.
I say that because I eat a lot of candy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pandemic, so you're in, you know, I'll eat another Snickers, I'll eat this. And so, you know, for those listening, you know, try to eat fresh fruits and vegetables when you can. But yeah, a little bit. I mean, there was obviously a backlog. And so immediately coming out of the lockdown phase, there were lots of people who needed to be seen, people who had never seen a dentist. As Dean Murdoch-Kinn said before, I mean, we were the safety net for a lot of individuals. But moving forward, I mean, there's procedures. I don't know that I'd say it's business as usual, but there have been increased numbers in different things. People have picked up some bad habits. I've seen some pretty interesting things here recently in the last few weeks.
I'm kind of curious to what those bad habits are. Are we allowed to know?
No, I can't share, unfortunately.
Okay, well, I can say I'm not a patient, so you can share my bad habits. I'm just kidding. Dr. Stewart, I mean, what are some of the things that you think moving forward people are going to experience differently? Like if they haven't been to the dentist in the last year?
I know a lot of dental offices have gone to, you would just drive by if you have maybe a child, you would check in outside, they would check your temperature, some of those protocols, and then you would actually wait in your car or you know, go get some Starbucks or something like that. So not being able to come in, the spacing has been tremendous. And so I know in the School of Dentistry, we've made a lot of physical modifications, removing chairs to ensure that we have physical distancing. There's a lot of roadmaps, I call them, on the ground. So, you know, where you can stand, where you can enter the building, where you can exit. So just the overall feel, the experience is a little different. And so if you haven't been, I think it will be, it'll take some getting used to, but you know, there's still friendly faces. We're still with the same noble cause, trying to make sure you have the best possible oral health. And so that part will be the same. And then minus us looking like astronauts, as you said earlier, I think everything else they can, they'll be able to appreciate and they'll settle back into some comfort there.
Mm-hmm. And Dean Murdoch-Hinch, what would you say is, I guess, the big takeaway as we get ready to end the segment here? What is the big takeaway for students in the school?
For students in the school, we tell them you're resilient. You've got this. You've gone through dental school in one of the most unprecedented times in history. And anything that you encounter in your practice, in your career in the future, you have the resilience and the tools to be able to figure out what you need to do based on the best science, and you will not only survive, you will thrive.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for speaking with us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. Dr. Kelton Stewart is chair of the Department of Orthodontics and Facial Genetics at Indiana University, and Dr. Carolyn Murdoch-Hinch is dean of the IU School of Dentistry. Coming up, we'll hear from the president of the Indiana Dental Association on some new laws aimed at dentistry, including one that gives the option to vaccinate patients, plus a quick preview of Earth Day. If you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Governor Eric Holcomb has recently signed some bills into law that affect the dental field. With us now to talk more about that is Dr. David Wolf, president of the Indiana Dental Association. Welcome, Dr. Wolf. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Miriam. Thank you.
So I'll be honest, I've never really thought about laws being passed to enhance the dental field. Can you tell us why the government is involved in our mouths?
Okay. Sure. You know, as Dr. Murdoch-Hinch said, the Indiana Dental Association created a COVID task force early on back in March a year ago. And initially, it was to create the protocols for dentists to go back to work in their offices. But we were also thinking proactively that if this vaccine comes around, there'll be a great need for multiple healthcare workers to provide the vaccine. So that's why we came up with a bill requesting that ability. And it was H. Bill 1079, which was passed. Representative Denny Zent carried that bill for the Indiana Dental Association. He happens to be an endodontist, retired endodontist that is now a state rep. And this bill allows dentists to administer 14 different vaccines. I doubt that dentists will all of a sudden offer vaccines of all varieties in their dental offices. I think federally qualified health centers will use dentists for these vaccines. What I've gotten more calls on, there are dentists, you know, we go into healthcare to help people. And I've had dentists go to clinics to volunteer, and then they're given a clerical job or take temperatures of those that are seeking the vaccine. We can't give it. So this bill now allows dentists to provide the vaccine among other vaccines.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of this COVID sort of task force that you put together, is this similar to other states, or is this something separate for Indiana that you guys came up with?
This is separate from Indiana, and we tried to be proactive. Actually, we came out with protocols for going back into the office roughly a month before the American Dental Association came out with recommendations. So I'm really proud of the Indiana Dental Association. Our task force met weekly. We were all doing research, readings, checking with CDC, working with the governor's office, with Dr. Box. We wanted dentists to get back to work. You know, as it was said earlier, we feel like we are essential. If you have a toothache, you are essential to provide care for that person, for them to get relief. So that was our rationale.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, with the vaccines that are going to be able to be provided? You mentioned that you don't have to provide all of these, what is it, 15 or 16 vaccines, different types of vaccines. What exactly does that entail, and why did it need to have a law around it?
I think back in 2006, there was a maybe a polio spread in Fort Wayne, Allen County, and they allowed pharmacists to administer vaccines. And so that has carried on. And it just makes sense, you know, as we created this bill and we talked to other reps and senators, we talked to the governor, lieutenant governor, and they all said, this makes total sense. You guys give shots every day, all day long. Why wouldn't you give vaccines? It's much easier to give an injection in the arm than it is in the mouth where you've got spit and a tongue in your way and so forth. So I think dentists are very comfortable doing it. We just, it wasn't legal for us to do that. So now I think dentists are excited that they can go like out to the Indianapolis Speedway when they have an event to give the COVID vaccine, and they can volunteer their time and be able to do a community service that is much needed.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this will help with COVID-19 vaccinations?
Oh, sure, I do. I think the more that are more people that are able to help to administer that, I think maybe 25% of the Indiana citizens have both vaccines now. You know, that's an accomplishment, but we've got a long way to go yet. This isn't over.
Mm-hmm. And what about, we heard a guest in the previous segment mention telehealth. How has that been impacted right now with the pandemic? Has that increased? Is that something that dentists feel comfortable doing?
It has definitely increased, and I don't know that telehealth will ever be used in dentistry as much as it is in medicine, but I can give you a couple examples, you know, from my personal experience. I had someone that, you know, when we had shut down that they had a sore lesion in their mouth, they sent a photo with their phone. I was able to look at it. I knew exactly what it was, prescribed steroid ointment. That they could get at the pharmacy and didn't have to have a visit in my office. So it was, you know, time-saving, money-saving, and all that. Another example, I have a patient that drives an hour to my office, and his daughter called and said his implant's out. Well, it really wasn't his implant. He fell and had a bridge that came out. She showed me pictures of his teeth, showed me pictures of what came out. I said, absolutely, come to my office. I know I can fix that. Had it been, you know, more severe, tooth broken off or whatever, I may have referred them to an oral surgeon, or if the symptoms were different, maybe referred them to an endodontist. But I definitely think there's a place for teledentistry or a telehealth in our field.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to ask you what I asked Dr. Stewart earlier. In your experience coming into this when the pandemic was first being reported, what was that experience like for you? Were you worried at all? Or is this, you know, because you've dealt with so many other diseases and things that you have to be aware of, was it just finding a new way to deal with it?
I think you're right on there. It was finding a new way to manage things. I think we were all nervous having patients come in. We were just all on guard. I know coming back to work, my staff were very nervous about coming back and working in the environment. But we had a Zoom meeting with my staff like a week before, and went over all the protocol, how are we going to handle things, and it was very effective. Everything went smooth, but we kind of eased back in. We did emergency procedures and some elective procedures. Then we had part of the hygiene staff back, and then all of the hygiene staff back over a three-week period. So we kind of tested our protocols to make sure everything was going to work before we went full steam. And what I found is patients were very reluctant to come in, too. But once they came in our office and could see, I mean, physically see, the minute they walk in the door, the changes that we have made, they were much more relaxed. And for the most part, people have complimented us and said, you know, I feel so good that what you're doing. I'm glad I kept my appointment because I feel much safer now. And I feel the same way. I feel safer in my dental office than I do anywhere, the hardware store, the grocery store, any place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say that's probably one of the first places I went to when things opened up. And I'm sure my dentist is sick of me. I'm always like, I feel something, it hurts. I need to check it out. So I need that freedom to be able to do that on a regular basis.
Sorry, nothing gets better usually. So good for you.
Thanks. But I guess the other thing I'm wondering is what does the Indiana Dentist Association, what are you able to do for dentists across the state, for example, when it comes to COVID? Are there certain I guess, support measures that you have in place to help them?
I wouldn't say they were really in place, but that's what our COVID task force did. We immediately started researching because when people went back to their offices to work, there was a shortage of PPE. Masks were hard to come by. So we were finding sources for the dentists. National government and state government got masks, and the American Dental Association got a supply. And so we were fielding, where can we get them? How can we get them to our local dental offices? Indiana got some masks from FEMA, and they were distributed through the local health department. So we, got word out to the dentist where the nearest location is so you can get masks. And then for a while it was tough getting gloves, and you could only order a limited amount from suppliers. So we came up with new suppliers and where you could look to get the personal protective equipment so that you can stay in business and treat patients.
Mm-hmm. And how is the status with the PPEs right now? Is everything back to normal?
I wouldn't say it's back to normal, but we're not struggling to get stuff now. But there's still limits on things that we order. So in my office, for example, we have always used one vendor to get all of our supplies. We're now using five vendors because you can only get two cases of gloves this month. That's not near enough. So we're using multiple vendors now in order to maintain a supply to keep our office flowing well.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's just kind of now splitting into so many different places where you have to direct your attention. But thank you so much. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon sometime, hopefully something lighter, not about the COVID pandemic.
That would be great. Thanks for the ask, Miriam.
Thank you very much. Dr. David Wolf, president of the Indiana Dental Association. If you have any questions or comments for our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. You could also send us a digital voice message with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Earth Day is next week, but there's an event that is not going to take place. Well, it is, but not next week. With us now is Greg Ziesmer, Executive Director of Earth Day Indiana. Welcome, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a joy to be here, and thank you for this opportunity.
So tell me a little bit about Earth Day Indiana before we go into this event that is happening but not happening.
It is happening, but even better than you would think. Earth Day Indiana was founded in 1990 to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Earth Day worldwide, Earth Day International. We're going into our 31st anniversary celebration this year, our 30th having been last year in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. We were the only festival to successfully put on an event in downtown Indianapolis without cancellation. We were fortunate enough to be only postponed, but that also put us into a very unique position of having to be the guinea pigs for setting the benchmark on how to do a large public outdoor event in the midst of the pandemic, which we were successful in doing. The Earth Day Festival has been going on for 30 years. This is only my second year. And I didn't see this one coming, but I certainly am working hard to rise to the challenge with my staff. I have a great committee of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about last year. You said you held the event despite being in the middle of the pandemic. How was that even possible?
Well, first of all, we were given six choices of dates to postpone the event, which normally for the last 30 years has been held on the Saturday closest to Earth Day. Earth Day is April 22nd. But after 2018 and 2019 being rainouts and 50 degrees freezing, it just didn't seem practical to put on an event if people weren't going to come and feel comfortable coming. So the board of directors recommended, on top of the COVID pandemic reaction, that we move the event to a warmer time of year and to a different venue from where we were at Military Park, into more of a community environment. So the first thing we had to do was figure out how to present the festival safely and within compliance to the state and Marion County Health Department mitigation protocols. And so that was our first focus. And I had extended an invitation to Mayor Hogsett to come to the festival back in February, leading up, planning on April. And we got our response from the mayor's office the day after July 2nd when he announced the mask mandate. So all of a sudden it was game on. We had to be absolutely on our best presentation. So I located and was cold called a company in Beech Grove, a local Indianapolis family-owned business called State Safety and Compliance. They stepped up as an in-kind sponsorship and provided us 1,000 masks, almost 50 canisters of hand sanitizer, and then we engineered the festival with signage to encourage people to either wear a mask, go to the birthday tent and get a free mask, hand sanitize, and then we also maintained single-file social distancing and directional traffic in all of our exhibitors' tents. And so we made a very concerted effort throughout the event to be as mindful and compliant as possible. And we were successful. Mayor Hogsett gave us very high praise.
Well, I do have to ask this because you said you passed out 1,000 masks. How does that correlate with Earth Day? A lot of masks, a lot of trash?
Well, that's a good question. What's interesting is we still have over 950 masks because those that came were conscientious and did the right thing. We didn't hand out nearly as many masks as we had anticipated because people were responsible, they acted appropriately, and they came masked. So other than that, it's really more of an environmental encouragement. Just like I would encourage people to use ashtrays in their cars and not flick their cigarette butts out the window. Wear a mask. Do the right thing. And don't do it for you. Do it for those that you are going to be around and exposing. So really elevating our desires and requests to have people come and be responsible participants and patrons of the festival is where that starts. And we had very, very good response to that. Now, as far as
before we want to run out of time.
Yeah, quickly.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say, before we run out of time, what is happening this year?
This year, we have moved the festival to World Environment Day, which was founded by the United Nations 4 years after Earth Day was founded in 1970. So we moved it to World Environment Day, which is the first Saturday every year. First Saturday in June 5th this year, and we have relocated the festival to Garfield Park so that we can be more involved and engaged with our communities, the neighborhood associations of Garfield Park, Bean Creek, and others around the park are actively involved in putting on the festival this year. And we're returning with the same protocol and elevated precautions and measures at the event this year to make it as safe as possible. Actually, last year was much more challenging than this year because we do have an elevated awareness and people are doing the right thing, getting their vaccinations and other things. But we will still have the masks and everything that we did last year, even elevated higher at Garfield Park this year on June 5th.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time. And again, what's the date? I just want to remember.
Saturday, June 5th, World Environment Day. Every day is Earth Day. Every day is Earth Day. So we can move it around anytime and still be doing the right thing. So we decided to make the weather warmer, the days and the sunshine longer, and the kids will just be out of school. And I can promise you, my birthday being on June 4th, for 62 years, it's going to be a beautiful day for a festival. Please come out.
All right.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you so much, Greg Ziesmer, Executive Director of Earth Day Indiana. Thank you so much for joining us. Our producers, Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross, our engineer, also composed our theme song. Join us Monday as we talk about the pandemic and its effect on sex and relationships. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.